Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts along with noted crime consultants and attorneys often featured on the popular news programs For Families of Violent Crimes to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Tom Shamshak, retired chief of police and private investigator, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on top of the crime at the top of their game. CrimeWire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the CrimeWire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death, case, or you'd like to be considered for a segment on a case for a future show, please email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
On May 14, 2006, 18-year-old Bronx, New York High School senior Samantha Guzman was just weeks away from graduating. She had already picked out a beautiful red dress to wear to the senior prom where she would be crowned as the prom queen. She had proudly modeled the dress for her mother and imagined the tiara she would wear that night. But she never had to wear her prom outfit in life, because at 1 o'clock that morning, she was gunned down on a Bronx street, the victim of a senseless shooting. Her only crime was being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Samantha and several girlfriends had been walking to a bus stop on their way home from a friend's home when they encountered a fight in progress involving about a dozen people. They tried to pass by the combatants and continue on their way, but two members of the group confronted them and demanded money. The girls refused to submit to the robbery and fled when one of the suspects produced a handgun. An estimated 30 shots were fired at them, and Samantha was hit twice. None of the other girls were injured. No arrests have been made so far. The police claim to have a suspect, but they lack sufficient evidence to file charges. Joining us tonight to talk about this tragic case are Jean Cervantes of Citizens Against Homicide and Diana Rodriguez, Samantha's mother. And welcome, both of you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could, Diana, I'd like to start with you. And before we get into the details of what happened that night and what's happened since then, would you tell us a little bit about Samantha, what kind of girl she was, what she was interested in, what she planned for her life?
Well, Samantha was quite a tough little girl growing up. She was always looking for better things to do for herself and her family. It's really hard because the last year of her life, I have to say, was when Samantha was growing up. It was like her dad, you know, needed her because he was going for a back operation. And she decided to move to the Bronx. And she excelled in school. Samantha was like the backbone of this family. Ever since Samantha's been gone, it's been really hard for all of us.
Diana, did Samantha have any plans for after she graduated? What did she intend to go to college, or what did she intend to
do? Yeah, she wanted to go to college. She told me one time she wanted to be a doctor, but she was aiming for nursing.
Okay. And if you could, let's go back to May 14th, 2006, and tell us what you remember about that night.
Oh, God, I remember everything. I remember everything I did. I remember being home that night. I remember a few minutes before I got the call about Samantha. We were about to go to sleep, me and my children. It was the night before Mother's Day. My girls came, Crystal and Heather. They went inside my room with some balloons and everything, singing Happy Mother's Day to me. We said good night, and we were about to go to sleep, and we heard gunshots. It was a lot of gunshots around our neighborhood. We all was like, oh, my God, and we just started praying, and, you know, all of us. About 1:10 in the morning, I received a call. And that call, it was like the most, I still to today, I feel like it's true, even though they said it was her friend that called me. I don't know if it could have been a friend that called me. I don't know who called me, because the person asked me, they asked if this was Diana. And when I said, yes, they said, Samantha just got shot. And the line went dead.
So you don't know if it was somebody that was maybe out there, because you don't remember them identifying themselves at all?
What they told me was that it was her friend who had called from somebody else's cell phone. But the person had tried calling my daughter, Venus, like maybe 10 times before she even called to my phone. So, to be really honest, it's like, you know, it was just like the call just came in. They asked if it was me. I said it was Diana. She was like, Samantha just got shot, and the line went dead. And then when we called back the phone number, there were some other girls on the line, and they said that Samantha was in the ambulance with her friend, and they were going to the hospital, but we didn't have no idea what hospital Samantha was taken to. Her father.
I don't know why. Well, they called you right away, and it makes it worse when you don't know. And your frustration, because you get that call and the line goes dead.
Uh-huh.
So how do you find out then that, you know, what hospital she's at and where you have to be?
Her father went to 3 different hospitals before he found out where she was.
I might add that there was a lot of confusion. And Angie, are you on the line yet?
No, she's not there.
Okay. There was a lot of confusion that night. And like Diana said, no one really knew what hospital she was taken to. And ultimately, she was found, though. And
she was. Her father drove to Lincoln Hospital, and that's when he found out where she was at. She was in St. Barnabas Hospital in the Bronx. And when he got there, they were about to operate on her, and they took her into the operating room. And when I reached there, because I lived in Staten Island, she's in the Bronx, when I get there, it was maybe about an hour and a half. And she was gone at 3:33 in the morning.
And she was shot twice, right?
Yes.
Did her dad at least get to see her before she went into the operating room, or no?
He did, but she said she was unconscious.
Okay. And then,
did you ever get a call from any actual authorities? Or you had that one call initially where the caller hung up. Did police or anybody ever call you to help you out or tell you where she was or anything?
No.
Maybe Angie. Angie's on the phone now with us. Maybe she can shed some light. Angie, hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you guys? Sorry I'm late.
It's all right. We're talking, you know, just that night and what took place. And you know, she's talking about, Diana's talking about her daughter and how she didn't get there before the surgery started. And so maybe you can help us with a little bit with that.
I actually, to be honest with you, I don't know that much about that part of it.
Okay. When you got involved with the family, that was because, you know, it's odd to me that law enforcement doesn't call them immediately.
I never received a call from the cops. I received the call from one girl, And then that was it. I didn't receive a phone call from a police officer or anyone. When we got to the hospital, everybody was there. There was the detective was there.
And so they were all there, and you spoke to them, and you were finding out what happened, right? Was anybody else shot along with your daughter?
Yes. She had her best friend, Christina.
I didn't hear what she said. Something happened.
She had her best friend, a friend of hers that she grew up with out here in Staten Island, was with her. And supposedly that was the girl who called me. That was the girl who had called me, but I remember that call. I feel like that call was the most cruelest call, because how they're going to call you, they're not going to give you information, nobody's going to tell you anything. Just know Samantha got shot and the line goes dead.
Susan, am I still on?
Yeah.
Huh?
I got a message saying I'd been disconnected. I wanted to make sure I was still live.
Yeah, we hear you, Denny.
But Samantha was with her girlfriend, Christina, her boyfriend, and Christina's boyfriend, and I believe Christina's cousin's boyfriend. There was two guys, and it was Christina and Samantha.
Okay, let me ask you this, Angie. At what point, how long after the event did you become involved?
Angie?
Is she still there?
Hello?
Yeah, Angie?
Oh, it's cutting in and out. I'm sorry. Okay. I didn't hear the question.
The question was, Angie, from me. I'm Denny.
Hi.
How long after the shooting did you become involved? And explain a little bit about how you got involved and what's happened on your end since that time.
Well, Diana contacted, I believe, Citizens Against Homicide, and they forwarded it on to me. And I called Diana and have actually met her in person in her home state, which is quite a ways from where I live. Spent quite a bit of time telling me about what she knew, and it sounds like to me that there's information out there if somebody would just come forward and tell them so they can get this person locked up.
And Angie, how long was this after the actual shooting took place before Citizens Against Homicide got involved?
I believe she contacted me 1st of April of this year.
Of this year. So you're relatively new in it.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
This is actually
and
my first time calling in.
Have you had any dealings yourself with the police in this matter? I mean, any direct contact with the police?
I've just made a few phone calls and emails to Detective Geist, and he's been very helpful. But as he told me, there's just not much things to go on out there. And so that's where I'm at right now.
Is it because there's so many involved in this with the gang and they're not sure who the shooter was? I mean, they've got a lot of suspects, don't they?
That's what it sounds like to me from what Diana's told me. I was just looking here through my stuff and seeing the reports don't really say much. I mean, they don't really have much information to go by.
So, Jean, look, you know, this case is classic of when these types of killings take place, it's kind of all chiefs and no Indians. I mean, they just don't seem to want to investigate. Clearly nobody wants to come forward, or they're afraid because this has gang affiliations, not from Samantha, but from the activities of the shooters.
Well, that's what it sounds like. I had a brief conversation with one of the sisters of Samantha, and I believe it was Venus, and she indicated that there was quite a large group assaulting one individual, and like it was said at the beginning of the show, there was no confrontation by Samantha's group. It was just a matter of we're trying to avoid it, and the next thing you know, the group that was assaulting this one guy breaks up into smaller groups, and two of the assailants approached the Samantha's group and brandished a gun and start pistol whipping one of the male friends. And everything went into chaos from there. It just went, got out of control. Shots are fired for no reason. I mean, it was senseless shooting because the victims were running away. There was no confrontation, no threat to the shooter, but he chose to shoot. And like Angie just said, somebody out there knows. And Diana had already mentioned that Samantha's best friend, and I'm getting this information from both the sister and from Geist, because I did have occasion to talk with the detective trying to get him to come on the show. And he had to get permission from it's a process that they go through as a deputy commissioner of public information that needs to approve it. And when I wrote the letter a few months ago, I never got a response. But that's the story I get, that it was just chaos followed by a senseless shooting.
So is there, Gene and Diana, is there a detective assigned then to this case? Yes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so are you in constant communication with him, Diana?
I do call, and sometimes I do get callbacks, but I haven't spoken to him since I spoke to him, I think, back in April.
Is there still a $12,000 reward that the New York Police Department had posted? Is that still alive and live as far as a reward?
I believe so.
Okay, well, that's a lot of money for some gangbanger out there that maybe wants to come clean. I mean, we talk about this all the time on these shows, don't we, Denny, about your tip is anonymous and it's not going to go anywhere. And people seem to think that because of technology, they're going to be found out somehow, and they're not, are they?
Nope.
No, and, yeah, it's very frustrating, and I understand the concern by a potential tipster, somebody with information, you know, about their own safety and so forth. They got to, somehow the word has to get out to them that they can do this anonymously, and, you know, they can do the right thing and pass the information on. It's just absolutely critical that these cases will never get solved so long as the people who know something, who can advance the investigation, remain silent.
Diana, have you been back at the school at all, or passed out flyers? Have you been able to do any of that?
I was doing events in the school system in the Bronx. We did a lot of events out there in the streets, just trying to get – I passed flyers all around that neighborhood. So does the police also, you know. But nobody comes forward.
Okay, what about flyers in different places?
Yeah, I have
reward,
in Staten Island and everything, yes.
Is
no
a reward
one
post down there?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, up and down near where the shooting was, maybe some residents and people
yes.
are still there, maybe the bus drivers, maybe
yes.
at the stations.
No one's come forward. 6 years.
Susan, what we're trying to do, and I'm still working on it, I'm just having problems making contact. We're going to try to get a billboard up with Samantha's picture and the advertising the reward. But like I say, I'm having problems contacting the right people. In California, you know, our home state, we have a lot of contacts. So it's a matter of contacting the people here, and then they refer me to somebody, and then they refer me to somebody. But we also have Bill Sullivan introduced me to a contact that might be able to help. So I'm.
Do we have a website for Samantha someplace as well?
She had a My Facebook page a while ago, but I'm not sure if it's still up.
Okay, that's not good enough. I mean, she needs a page. You know, like what was nice was that in 2009, ABC did a nice
story. She had
story.
One in 2000. She just had a Facebook page also.
Okay.
But I usually have all of the information in my page. Everything is about Samantha, majorly.
Okay. Do you Twitter?
Not really.
Okay, I think that's a really good idea for you to start and get that out there and connect to the schools and areas out there. Also connect to the prisons. You know, a lot of these people that are in the prison, again, you know, they might come forward. These were a lot of gang members, weren't they?
I'm not sure. I don't know, to be really honest. What I read in the newspapers is that it was a group of thugs, about five or six of them, and they pistol whipped one of the friends that were with Samantha, and the other three were running. And then they started shooting.
Okay, because in 2009, seven reputed gang members were busted in connection with a string of alleged crimes, and police could be closer to solving a 2006 murder of a young girl because of the arrests. Those arrested alleged members of the Bloods gang were arrested this morning. This is,
that
again,
was
in 2009.
In 2009, that was an era. The people that were arrested with in that time, it had nothing to do with Samantha.
Okay, and so they just put, but she did get some press.
They made such a big deal. I had the media all up in my house. Everybody was there. All the newspapers, all the news people were in my house, and I come to find out from the DA's office that none of them had to do anything with Samantha's murder.
Angie, did you hear anything from Geist about the status of the case?
You know, the last time I talked to him, I asked him what was happening, what has been done, and he told me that once a year he goes out and puts posters up, and that's basically all he said that's happening right now.
What I do,
what about
is
the ballistics,
I do events.
Andy?
I've done events with, oh, my God, Beyond Bullets. I've done events in the school system doing Samantha's story, like a little skit. You know, it's out there. It's out there. I've done my part. I've been in the news. You know, I just don't let it go, you know. But
what about the bullets from when she was killed? Have they ever said or checked if they've matched perhaps other killings prior to or after Samantha had died?
I believe the gun was fired once before, but no one got hurt. That I know of, that was it.
How would they know that the gun was fired once before?
In Manhattan, because it, the ballistics of the bullets, I believe, somewhere
okay.
In Manhattan and in the Bronx.
And the other bit of information is that this Samantha story has been on America's Most Wanted. Can you shed some light on that? The last time it was aired, or do you know, Angie or
not,
Diane?
The last time they aired it, I haven't gotten in contact with the person, but they gave it a couple of times on the TV, like in the very beginning of the segment when it happened, but I'm not sure if they aired it any time now.
Yeah. Well, America's Most Wanted is back on the air. So.
Well, I'm also thinking, too, that perhaps the shooter, you know, a lot of these people father children. There are girlfriends. If somebody's in jail right now, maybe they'd like to come forward for the $12,000 reward. So maybe also to send information to the daycare centers, Catholic Charities that assisted, you know, maybe near there there's a food bank and things, a church. Maybe that's a way, too, because, you know, like I said, these gang members all have different relationships. A lot of times they say to somebody, man, you know, that was me. You better shut up or that's going to happen to you. Maybe people, again, don't know about the reward, don't know that, or this person is behind bars thinking, what the heck? But there's still a possibility that somebody could come forward and say, you know what, it's him. This is the person that did this.
That's my hope with this. This is like, I feel like for me, I feel like this is the last hope that I have, because I don't feel like nobody ever wants to come forward. I know this. I know that many people know what happened. I'm just waiting for someone to come forward and tell the truth.
What about
and
what about going
make
down?
Her friend talk.
I haven't
Christina.
Seen that girl since Samantha died. I seen them during that year that Samantha died, and then she just been ghost. I haven't seen it since. She doesn't
did
come around.
Did she show
nothing,
up at the funeral?
Nothing.
She
came. She was very frightened. She was very frightened. She didn't want to come inside. She had me come outside to get her. I believe she knows a lot more than what she's saying, and she doesn't want to say it.
And
my heart to heart, I do believe that. Because I'm saying, if you're Samantha's supposedly best friend, you don't get connected with none of her family. Something is just
unless,
not right.
Unless she knows.
And then the call was cruel. I still feel that call was cruel. How are you going to ask me if it's Diana? And after you ask and find out that it is Diana, you tell me Samantha just got shot and the line goes dead.
Were they good friends, you know, and don't take this wrong, but your daughter's going to be prom queen, right?
No, she was prom. They made her prom queen after she died. That's
okay.
The way
but she
her
was
best
very
friend
popular,
was.
Right?
Her best friend from school. Chesania was supposed to be prom queen, I think. But since when Samantha died, they gave her the title and they crowned her prom queen at her funeral.
Was there any jealousy? Was there a same boyfriend ever that you can remember, or somebody that maybe liked your?
To be honest, I just know. Because of certain things that they have told me, that she knows more than what she's saying. And I just hope that, you know what, that she finds it in her heart, if she does know more, to come forward.
Does her mama go to a church somewhere near you?
Her mom? Her mom?
Her mom moved
the same week that Samantha got murdered to Florida.
How convenient.
Okay. And when I say that I know in my heart of hearts that Samantha's friend knows more than what she's saying, I'm telling you. Because I don't see her. I heard from two different people that she was lying and she didn't want to come forward because she was afraid. You know what? She was your best friend, so you say. And if you know more than what you're saying, then you should come forward and just say it and put us to rest.
You know, sometimes there's not an understanding of that, and that's
okay,
the problem.
Okay, because to be honest, the way that I see it, and that call was the most cruelest call, okay? That's the call that I remember every night that I go to sleep. It's that call. It's how the phone rings, I pick up the access to Diana, I'm like, yes, Samantha just got shot and the lines go dead. Who would do that?
Gene or Angie, maybe either one of you would be able to answer this. Apparently, if one of the friends was pistol whipped, there was relatively close contact. I mean, they had to be within arm's length of each other. So somebody should have gotten a pretty good description. And I'm wondering if there was physical contact. Was there any chance there was any DNA? I mean, was there, you heard anything about any type, were there shell casings found, perhaps, with fingerprints, anything like that in the way of physical evidence that you're aware of?
I don't have anything in the reports that I have from
I do believe they have
Diana.
A video. They have a video of the whole thing. It's a video because it's recorded. They could see the guy shooting and everything. The only thing they can't see his face because it's a tree blocking him. They have a lot of evidence.
Okay.
It appears to be one of those cases where they have a lot of evidence, a lot of information, but not enough to convict.
Correct. Because nobody wants to come forward. Nobody wants to say what really happened, what happened. I don't know what happened. I was home. I was ready to go to bed, ready to go to church the next morning with my other children. Samantha was supposed to come to the house that Sunday. And I get that phone call. So I don't know what really happened that night. I don't know who she was with. All I know, it was her and her friend Christina, and she was going to Christina's friend's house with her. And I heard a lot of stories, but I just don't know which one is the truth.
Do you know where the best friend is right now?
No.
You don't know where she's living or anything?
Nope.
any relatives of hers. You know, I think it goes back to them not, anybody that's involved with a situation, they don't realize that calling anonymously it's the key, and they're afraid. And so that's part of the problem, because they don't believe what we said at the beginning of the show. They don't believe when you say, you know what, you're not going to get arrested, nothing's going to happen to you. And if you just come forward quietly and provide the information, that's all you have to do.
Somebody knows something. It's a lot of, like,
right.
I said, it's somebody knows something, it's just nobody wants to talk.
And
I can't tell you what happened because wasn't there. I just received that call, and when I got to the hospital, an hour later, my daughter died. On Mother's Day.
You know, Jean, it seems to me that this is one of those cases that should be solvable. I mean, we got apparently a video of the event going down. You've got, there should be eyewitnesses here. I mean, you have somebody who was close enough to be pistol whipped, must have got a look at the guy that was wielding the gun. You got the girlfriend, the Christina girl, acting, I would say, somewhat suspiciously. This was her best friend, supposedly, Samantha was. And after the murder, she kind of vanishes. In most cases, it would seem as though the friend, at least for a few months, would really be, trying to console the family and so forth. And I find that to be somewhat odd behavior, that she just kind of...
Oh, yes. So do I. I would
it's
never...
It's not odd behavior. It's a knowing behavior. We
exactly.
Talk about that a lot.
Knowing that she knows something and she doesn't want to come forward. That's the
or
way
something
she...
something else happened other than what was said because of this. So there's so many factors, and it doesn't make any sense that, no one really knows. Yeah, they're supposed to be best friends, and a best friend wouldn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right.
Yeah, Denny, I agree. And, Angie and I could...
It's a mother's thing. I don't know what it is. I know me and my Samantha had a connection, regardless of what anybody else can say.
Yeah.
And my daughter left me a message. Okay? And she left it through her father. Her father wrote that message, and it's on Facebook, and I put it constantly everywhere. She says she wants us to survive. She wants us to continue to do the things that we need to do, and she wants us to survive. I will survive this, because here it is 6 years later. Yeah, I'm still standing. But I don't know. How could anyone have the conscience of doing something like this? I don't feel like that call. How is it that you're going to call my daughter like 10 times? Venus, 10 times almost, before you even pick up the call to call me. And then just ask if this is Diana. Tells me Diamantha just got shot and the line goes dead. I don't understand that. Someone please explain that one to me, because I don't understand it.
It's usually somebody that has knowledge and just doesn't want to face and can't. And that's why they do it that way.
Angie and I will get together, Diane, and we'll see what we can do to get some more publicity for this case.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us, Diane.
Thank you. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Angie. Appreciate it.
Okay, I just was going to tell you real quick. I was looking at the New York City Police Department report, and they did get some evidence, some shell casings, 9mm, and assorted clothing.
Well, God, I know we got another segment to do here, but
right.
It just seems as though there's quite, again, this strikes me as something that should be solvable. It looked like evidence there, and, hopefully it'll get done, because Diana Santa deserves justice, and
yes, she does.
Diana deserves some resolution to this. I hesitate to say closure, because it's never going to be closed.
No,
I think the billboard's the best thing right now.
We'll try to get that, and Angie and I could talk later in the week.
Yes, Angela, and I'll give you a call. Okay.
Okay.
You have a good one.
I love you too. Thank you, Angie.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, ladies.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Before we get on to the second segment, Gene wanted to update us on a couple of cases that we've had profiled on Crime Wire in the past. Go ahead, Gene. What'd you tell us?
Yeah, on August 16, 2011, Crime Wire featured the case of William Walker. He was a CAH referral for the show. He was the victim of a pipe bomb explosion that took place in his garage and in Moses Lake, Washington. And as a result of the broadcast, I tried to get the lead detective, and he wasn't given permission to appear on the show. So I asked him, go back into our archives and listen to the show. So he did listen. He sent me an email, and he says, it's very short, so I'll just read it. I listened to the show and found it to be beneficial. This investigation is still open, but we have received no new leads. Now, this is the good news. KHQ News has shown some interest in doing a story on these cases. And when they use the word these, it's, I believe, if you recall that show, there were four bombings, four pipe bombs over a very short period of time. So they want to do a story on all the cases, and he'll let me know how it goes. And indicated that he'd love nothing more than to solve the case, and he's open to any ideas. So we're gonna, I'm gonna be working with him as well as the family, and try to get somehow. This happened in Washington, so they don't have the reward proclamation on the penal code that. Books that California has. So we're trying to get some monies because at this time there is no money for rewards. So that's kind of the so far that's it. He did indicate that there might be an opportunity at least to re-entertain going the FBI, ATF, and Homeland Security again. He said all of them had participated in one way or the other, some very brief, and then said, we're going to have to back out. And I believe Vito, at the time of the airing of this show, of this case, indicated that, you know, this should not happen in this country. A bomb, you know, that's the most heartless and cowardly way of killing somebody, just planting a bomb and running away. And Vito had made a very good point that, you know, not in America, not in this country. So anyway, we're going to, I'm going to be working with the authorities a little bit more in the future, in the next. Well, I told him I'd call him back after the holidays, the detective, because he was going to be gone, I'm going to be gone, and anyway, we'll see where it goes.
The other case was Mr. Bach, Victor Bach?
Yeah, Victor Bach. We, if you recall, we did him his show on the 30th of August, I believe it was 30th. Victor was bludgeoned to death. He's an elderly gentleman. He had his... plumbing hardware store in downtown San Francisco. They're in the Mission District. And he was bludgeoned to death and went, it's unsolved. And we featured it on the show, on Blog Talk Radio show, nothing developed. There is a $127,500 reward that somehow was lost in the message. No one got the word out, so I made our contact with our billboard people, and they said, "Yeah, we'll give you a billboard." And for the very first time in San Francisco Police Department history, we got a billboard reward posted in downtown San Francisco, well, the Mission District there. And the police were ecstatic. The lead detective in the cold case unit, Holly Pera, was just ecstatic. She's overwhelmed at the gesture, you know, the billboard and the advertising the reward. And then the good news is that although I haven't talked with her, she left a message on my phone saying that there was some interest. And what that meant, I haven't talked to her. She said there's it sparked some interest, and that's all she said. Get a hold of me. So I'm in the process of trying to get a hold of her. The other thing is this is also a case. Like Denny used the phrase earlier, it is solvable. This case has a lot of suspects, or one in particular, but I'm not privy to a lot of the information that the detectives have. So we just have to wait and hope for the best. Usually, and I was told by the sergeant in the information unit, public information office there in San Francisco Police Department, that, you know, your bank, your liquor distributor, you're going to get the billboard. This is the very first time something like this came up, and he was just overwhelmed. He says, let us know if we can help you in any way in future cases.
Well, great, Dean, and I want to be, just before we got to get to the second segment, I wanted to mention that there's another case that we profiled, and we're not at liberty to give the name of that case at the moment, but it appears that case may be on the verge of being solved.
Correct. Yeah, we'll know probably within a month.
So that's great.
So tune in.
As soon as
tune in January.
Yeah. Okay, great. Now, the second segment tonight, we're going to talk about an event from August 31st, 2010. 39-year-old Jimmy Spring was robbed and murdered in Scranton, South Carolina. The Florence County Sheriff's Department subsequently arrested four suspects. However, in spite of the severity of the charges, a judge released three of those suspects on house arrest. The fourth remains in jail, but is scheduled to have a bail hearing in the near future. And Jimmy's sister, Dusty Braddock, is joining us tonight to talk about the case and about this the circumstances under which these people were allowed to go back. You know, people accused of murder are allowed to go back into the community.
She needs to turn off the volume of the computer. I mean, it's coming back. Okay.
Okay, welcome, Dusty.
Hi.
Hi, Dusty.
Thanks for joining us. Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Was my opening statement accurate? Is that pretty much what happened about in your brother's case?
Yes. Yes, very accurate.
I can't help but ask it, and I'm not a lawyer, and I don't have all the facts of what went on here. It seemed a little, I'm concerned when I hear things like this. Maybe there's some reason for it, but...
Well, actually, it's funny. I have my husband with me right now, who is an attorney, so he can kind of explain South Carolina law a little better.
My question was there some special circumstances that would where it was prudent for the judge to let these three people out?
No. I mean, there were no there was nothing that would warrant them to be placed on house arrest. I think two of the suspects had never had a prior criminal record, and that was his main motivation to put him on house arrest. But, you know, the manner in which, I mean, they basically came into an unarmed man's house at 1:30 in the morning. My brother had recently been in a car accident prior to that night and had two broken hands, a wrist, and was in cast and couldn't defend himself. And so they knew this, they preyed on him, and he had my six-year-old nephew home with him at the time. He was a single parent. So, you know, it's the circumstances are very heinous, and we just don't know the judge's motivation as to why he put him on house arrest.
Did your brother know these guys then? They were acquainted somehow?
Yeah, he did. He had my brother was a foreman of a crew that did power line work, and he had encountered these guys based on his work and through another guy on his crew. And so when they came to his door at 1:30 in the morning, he knew them, so he opened the door.
And the motivation was robberies, for the initial motivation?
Yeah, that was their motivation. They had actually planned to rob him a couple days before, and they had cold feet, but then they came back that Monday night.
And how did the violence end up then? He wouldn't submit, apparently, to the robbery. Or did they just decide that since he knew him, they had to eliminate him?
That's a question we don't know. I mean, there have been several stories thrown out there. You know, each of the four suspects has kind of thrown their own story out there. But the theory the sheriff's department's still working on is that they brought him, you know, they sat him down at his kitchen table and said, "Hand me your money." And as he was reaching for his wallet, they shot him.
Now, the police or the sheriff's department apparently had probable cause, sufficient probable cause to make the arrests. You know, obviously these individuals aren't, you know, in the eyes of the law, are still not guilty, but there apparently was some evidence or maybe some substantial evidence that they're the guys that did it. Now, it seems, if I'm a citizen, if I'm living in that neighborhood, and I find out there's guys that have gone into a man's house at 1:30 in the morning to rob him and then allegedly just shot him as he was sitting for trying to get his wallet open, and they turn those guys loose, I would not be a happy camper. Do you have any clue of how the public reacted or is reacting to this thing?
The community he died in is a very small community. There's basically two sides. There's the side for the suspects and the side for my brother. There's so many rumors swirling around as to, you know, what happened. And it's basically the court of public opinion, I guess. Like, you know, some people think the judge was absolutely ridiculous for putting them on house arrest. And then other people are like, you know, they believe the rumors, you know, anything from my brother was followed him outside and was shooting at him, and that it was self-defense. You know, I mean, there are just so many rumors. And being that these guys were, in their teens, a lot of people are, you know, just can't fathom that these teenagers would do this.
I just got to say that, to me, it would be very difficult to convince me that when two people go into someone's house at 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the morning, that somehow they can claim they had to kill the occupant of the house in self-defense. To me, that's kind of a stretch. But anyway, Susan, what do you think about this and about, you know, if there's enough probable cause to make the arrest, you know, releasing these people? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think that nobody's watching the pot here. I mean, in South Carolina, I'm very familiar with what they do and they do not do. And a lot of this goes to the good old boy network a lot of times. in South Carolina. I mean, I've never seen a blatant disregard of justice, and I've had to spend a lot of time in South Carolina. I'm actually here now for a time, and I'm just amazed by the judges, by law enforcement. There's enough here to proceed, and yet they seem to be not thinking it's worth their time. Money and prosecutions seem to be a factor nowadays, not just in South Carolina, but in other states, where they're looking at the cost of prosecution, and yet they're releasing these people to kill and harm again.
Well, you know, Susan, I had a conversation with Dusty, and we were talking about this. I wanted to get some information to update Denny. Originally, this case was a cut-and-dry case for me. You know, I didn't have that much interest in it because the arrests were made, and I don't mean that in a discounting way. You know, it was serious enough for me to pay attention, but the arrests were made, these guys were in custody, and then Dusty tells me, no, they were released. I was beyond words. I just couldn't believe it. I said, wait a minute, you know, capital crime, and they were released. I said, let me do some checking. So I checked and checked and checked, and I finally got back with Dusty. We played phone tag for a better part of a month and a half, and finally made contact, and they were indicted in July of this year, and they were still allowed to remain on house arrest. One of the individuals was a minor at the time, and the other, and another individual is one that is on house arrest because of the tacit approval of the family of Jimmy's, because he's helping prosecution. So I'm reminded, for some reason or other, that a good lawyer knows the law. And great lawyers know the judge.
That's
and
right.
This is the perfect example of that phrase. I had to get
what
back.
What county is this in?
It's in Scranton. Oh, Florence County.
Florence County.
Florence. Okay. You know, again, you know, there's I have never seen. And I've had to do on a lot of cases, and I don't know what it is. I think that you're right. That was a great analogy of a lawyer and a judge, and between a good lawyer and a great lawyer. but we bend for silence, the silence being the victims, and the system does that. There used to be a time where people didn't get excuses. They didn't get to be in house arrest. There wasn't electronic monitoring bracelet, which a monkey can break out of. We didn't have all those things and technology and the opportunities. And yes, the jails are overcrowded. And that's what somebody who has the intent to take somebody else's life banks on. So they're banking on the fact that they're not going to get that much time. They're not, you know, they're going to be able to maneuver and be out and about and who knows what's going to happen, you know, at the time that they go to trial, or they might plea bargain before that happens. But most importantly, somebody's life was silenced. They can't come back. They can't breathe. They can't walk. They can't talk. They can't be productive. Nobody thinks about them.
Yep.
But, Dusty, what did the prosecutor say about this? Did the prosecution, the DA, have any comment? You know, did they fight it or what?
Dusty and I talked about that. Why don't you tell him, Dusty?
That hearing was, I mean, it was pretty much, I would say, just a joke. I mean, there was a very high-profile criminal defense attorney who showed up at the hearing for two of the suspects, and I think he just got away with his dog and pony show when he got to, you know, put on his superstar lawyer hat and, you know, claim his client's innocence and how they were innocent little lambs led to slaughter by two of the other suspects. And
that's his job. You know, and that's, you,
yes.
And you can't,
and,
you know,
and
defense attorneys, you know, that's what they do. But where is the state in this? Where is the DA who's supposed to be speaking up, who's supposed to be the people's attorney? Where are they in all this? Are they taking a back seat? Are they saying, is bond high enough? Are they saying that they're not a flight risk and then the prosecutor or the DA doesn't argue why they are? I think that's part of the problem too, don't you?
Well, there was not a lot of argument. There was not a lot of, you know, this community's really up in an outrage about this. There's two sides. You know, it was just not a safe situation right after my brother's death. And so, and the prosecutor didn't really, I don't think he ever grasped the fact that, you know, this is a very volatile subject. And he just, you know, it was like he kind of rolled over and said, okay, we'll take house arrest, you know, but they can't have Facebook. Well, you know, they have friends over constantly. You know, they have a 2-acre radius on their monitoring, but they can't have Facebook. You know, I mean, he just totally neglected the fight, you know.
Is he being monitored? Are they being monitored by, you know, the courts as far as a curfew and things?
They have a monitoring company, and that's about all we know. But like I said, we actually ordered a transcript of the hearing to make sure that we did not miss anything, but the judge never said no friends over. He just said no cell phones, no Facebook.
And there's no way you can control that. I mean, that's not going to happen, and you know that. I mean, it's not something
that
you can control.
And the third suspect, who's actually on house arrest, we did control that. He's under very strict guidelines, which is no friends, only family, no... I mean, he's basically told if you step outside of your front door, you need to keep going to the sheriff's department because that's where you're going. The third one, we were wise enough at that point to define the parameters. But the other two, the judge defined them, and he let them have carte blanche, you know. And
do they have a trial date?
We don't have anything yet.
All they have was an indictment. And I believe Dusty said something like the middle of next year. And I wanted to bring this, the reason I wanted to bring this to Blog Talk Radio is because I think the people of South Carolina, Florence County especially, should be outraged. And if somebody is in the know with the media, I think something needs to be done to expose this judge. He's...
Well, maybe if you send me something, I'm actually going to be there on Monday on a case, so maybe we can, but we're out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you to the CrimeWire team, our director of research, Kim Colton, and public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be Tuesday, December 13th, 2011. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guest. If you would like your case to be featured on CrimeWire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com, turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play. Remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website, www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, Tom Shamshak, and Susan Murphy Milano. And before I say goodnight, I want to thank you, Dusty, so much. And hopefully, we'd like to hear what transpires in this. So would you keep us in the loop?
Yeah, we definitely will. Thank you for having us.
I'm going to call you in about 2 minutes, Dusty.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
you,
everybody.
Denny. Thank you, Susan.
Stay safe and good night.
Thank you.
Good night.